Well, thanks for having me.
First of all, before we get started too far on this, I have to let you know that my last name is Belleville. So as a kid, I was teased mercilessly with the word Bellevue. And funny thing is that I didn't even know what it was representing. But Bellevue Hospital, of course, is in New York, and it's the oldest public hospital in the U.S., like back to the 1700s. Tell folks what it's all about. What's Bellevue Hospital if people, you know, aren't in the New York area and don't know about it?
Well, Bellevue is a huge city hospital, and it treats all sort of illnesses. And it's actually like a level one trauma center. I mean, you ask any cop in Manhattan if they got shot where they want to be taken, they'll tell you Bellevue. But because years and years ago it was an asylum, it's still really linked in people's minds that, you know, Bellevue is sort of where you go when you get crazy. And so what ends up happening is that, you know, because it's sort of in the public consciousness that this is an insane asylum, we end up getting a lot of very sick patients psychiatrically. I mean, you know, we'll have people take buses from Missouri or fly from Egypt and say, you know, I started to hear voices and I thought that I needed to be at Bellevue.
Oh, my.
So what was great for me was that, you know, what I wrote in the book was, you know, I thought I knew what crazy was, and then I came to Bellevue. I mean, I had always sought out the sickest, most psychotic patients because I'm very interested in psychosis. And I was always sort of seeking out a high degree of pathology. And it wasn't until I got to Bellevue that I was really satisfied with sort of the level of acuity that I was seeing. So the people there are very sick. I mean, there's a lot. What's great is that it's the biggest psychiatric department in the country. So you have really, really good psychiatrists coming from all over to work there and teach there, and sort of the cream of the crop medical students and residents going there. So they've got a very strong psychiatry department, great teaching hospital. I really loved being there. So for about 9 years, every Saturday night and Sunday night, I ran the psychiatric emergency room at Bellevue. It was really a dream job for me. It was a lot of fun. And the people that work there are really a lot of fun. Everybody sort of uses humor as a sort of first line defense. So we had fun at work.
You know, I for a brief time in my 20s, I worked as a receptionist at a psychiatric hospital in Idaho, Intermountain Psychiatric. And it was quite an interesting place to work between, you know, working with the staff and then a lot of the patients you would get to know, you know, and 6 days out of seven, they would be perfectly fine, wonderful folks. And then that seventh day, you know, their illness would take a hold of them. And it's very fascinating. I can understand why you'd find that fascinating. You know, in our neck of the woods here on this show, we, of course, talk a lot about marijuana and marijuana policy. And you mentioned having to deal with people with major psychoses. And one of the things we hear a lot from the prohibitionist mindset is that the use of marijuana is going to lead to psychosis and schizophrenia. As someone who's actually worked with people in psychosis and schizophrenia, can you address that topic a bit?
Yeah, well, I'm editing a book right now on cannabis, and I have a whole chapter on that. And it's very complicated. Is, you know, the take-home answer is you're not ever going to have a soundbite that addresses this. It's very complicated. But what I will say about schizophrenia is that schizophrenia is more, you know, a lot of people consider it to be multiple diseases. It's more a syndrome than a specific illness. But even if it were a single illness, it's very much genetically based. 1% of the population worldwide has schizophrenia, and it's a very specific thing. You can't cause schizophrenia by doing anything. It's really believed that it's something that you're born with a predisposition where you're going to get it. You know, when you get to be about 19, 20, 21, things start really unraveling and you get sick and you stay sick basically until you die. You can't create or cause schizophrenia. Now, there are plenty of drugs that can make you psychotic. And when you stop using the drug, the psychosis goes away. I mean, say somebody who's on a crack binge or a methamphetamine run where you're using stimulants and dopamine agonists day after day after day and you get psychotic. But when you stop the meth or the cocaine, the psychosis goes away. It's possible that there's some strains of cannabis where because of the THC-CBD ratio, which we should probably talk more about. I mean, there's a lot of psychoactive ingredients in this plant. And some of them can trigger anxiety, and some of them can quell anxiety. And some of them can make you paranoid, and some of them can stop you from being paranoid. And so, you know, one of the problems is when you try to create a synthetic cannabinoid, when you take something like Marinol, which is pure THC, as opposed to the plant, some of the things in the plant will sort of work against the THC. Mm-hmm. So there are some strains where the CBD which is cannabidiol, but that the ratio with CBD and THC is such that it can make you kind of more paranoid and more self-conscious. And it's possible that it could, in people who are predisposed to getting psychotic, it could make them psychotic. For instance, somebody who is bipolar, there are certain strains of cannabis which can make you a little bit more manic-y or grandiose or mm-hmm. delusional or psychotic or disorganized. For some people, there's some strains that are sort of a destabilizer, and they can add to psychiatric symptoms. And in people who've got a family history of schizophrenia or who are going to end up schizophrenic themselves because they're just genetically predisposition to that, or the same thing with bipolar, then the cannabis could make it more likely that they're going to have a psychotic episode. So it's really complicated. I mean, there's something called a stress diathesis model, which is the idea that you've got a predisposition to go one way, and then if you push, you know, it's like you're on the edge, and if mm-hmm. something pushes you over the edge, then you're going to have that symptom.
Yeah.
So you could say that some people are sort of more likely they have a diathesis, meaning they would go in that direction anyway.
Yeah.
But the cannabis could be the stress that puts them over the edge. But it's there's not a lot of very strong data supporting mm-hmm. this.
You know, and as I think about that, and we talk about people might have a predisposition, genetic predisposition to this, I worry that we have such an underreporting and underdiagnosis of a lot of mental health disorders that some people may not even know that they have this in their background.
Right. But you know what happens is somebody gets sick and they go to the hospital and then they start looking back and saying, well, what caused this? What were you doing? And we see this all the time at Bellevue, where somebody will be bipolar and they're clearly bipolar and there's just not much of a question as to what their illness is. But, oh, you know, 2 years ago they took LSD and they've never been the same since then. So, you know, the parents feel like the LSD caused the illness. It's like, no, the genetics caused the illness, but the LSD pushed them over so that now you could see the illness.
Mm.
So people sort of backtrack and try to start to figure out, and this happens a lot, where a lot of people smoke cannabis.
Yeah.
And some of those people are going to end up with psychiatric symptoms. That doesn't mean that it caused it.
Right.
So, and you'll see this a lot with like the gateway hypothesis, which is just completely garbage. You know, somebody who is shooting up heroin, but they smoke pot before they smoke heroin. Well, they also probably smoked cigarettes and drank alcohol before they smoked pot. So, you know, it doesn't mean that just because somebody did something 2 years ago, it caused their situation now.
Right.
There's correlation.
Yeah. I always say that the only thing that marijuana and heroin have in common is they're both illegal. The reason they don't call tequila a gateway drug is because they don't sell cocaine next to it.
Yeah.
So we have that. And you know, with regard to the schizophrenia and psychoses, you know, I'm no scientist, but I always just kind of applied a little common sense to it. If there were some link between cannabis and psychoses, wouldn't we have seen a whole lot more psychoses in the 1970s? But maybe that explains bell bottoms.
Well, it's a very good joke, but it's also very true that, you know, you would have seen, it would be so much more starkly apparent.
Well,
you know, people are looking for connections. And I think if you look hard enough with statistics, you can find just about anything.
Sure. You know, I first discovered you from an appearance that you made on NBC's Today Show that I wanted to address. And this is a month or two ago when the Marie Claire article came out called about the Stiletto Stoners, so-called Stiletto Stoners, the successful professional women. And I was really surprised because in my job, I end up watching a lot of these media presentations. And there's generally a theme. We have generally good cop, bad cop, or good guy, bad guy. There's always two sides to every issue, kind of a fight. And when Matt Lauer came on with you and the woman who is the editor of Marie Claire, she began. And so she was very forthright and positive about our issue. And when the camera turned to you, I said, all right, here it comes. Here comes the reefer madness. Here comes something crazy about marijuana. And to my surprise and delight, you were very sensible about the issue as well. How did you get yourself into this issue of medical marijuana? And as maybe a side note, why do you think we're seeing so much more support among women and this becoming a woman's issue?
So the first question, I mean, I actually came to it very backwards. I edited a book on MDMA, which is better known as the drug ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
MDMA is a Schedule I drug that has tremendous medical potential. It could be very, very useful to the field of psychiatry. And I've come to realize that cannabis, which is also a Schedule I drug, has tremendous potential to be useful to psychiatry and the rest of medicine. So, I come at it from a doctor who is saying, excuse me, these are medicines and they're being treated as illegal drugs. And if we could change the scheduling, you know, the problem, it just makes no sense to me on any level why cannabis is a Schedule I drug. It's saying that there's no medical potential and that it has a high potential for abuse. I mean, that, you know, we could put cigarettes in Schedule I or we could put alcohol in Schedule I, but it doesn't make sense to have cannabis in Schedule I. It makes more sense to have it in Schedule III, which I'm sure you know is what the administrative law judge agreed to back when DEA had that question.
Right.
In terms of women and marijuana, you know, it was interesting after Stiletto Stoners, I get so much email from women saying, you know, like, thank you for telling my story and, you know, thank you for representing me. Way to represent. There's a lot of pot smoking women out there. And, you know, I was on the Today Show again a second time talking about marijuana moms, this idea that, you know, mothers could actually use cannabis. But a lot of women don't like alcohol, don't like the way it feels. Their bodies don't metabolize alcohol very well. They don't appreciate the calories involved. They don't like being hungover. They perhaps know that it's toxic to the brain and the liver. I mean, alcohol is not such a great drug. It's not terribly healthy. And, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that cannabis is healthy, but if you do a head-to-head comparison and look at what's more toxic, what's more dangerous, I mean, any doctor who has got any toxicology training at all has to agree that cannabis is a safer drug than alcohol.
Definitely.
So, I'm a psychiatrist, and there's one thing I know, it's that people want to alter their consciousness. You know, everyday waking consciousness is not where people want to sit 24/7. It's natural to want to alter your consciousness, and it's natural every culture, and many different species besides humans look for ways to alter ourselves. So this is sort of a normal human thing. And, you know, because of our drug laws, everybody thinks it's perfectly normal and okay to use alcohol. But from a medical perspective, it's not necessarily the best way to go. So I think that maybe some women are figuring this out.
Yeah, it looks like it. I mean, we look at the Gallup poll from 2005 and then the Gallup poll from 2009. And while support among men rose by about a percentage point, support among women raised like a whole 10 to 12 points, depending on the margin of error. So there seems to be some sort of revolution going on, and maybe just women have had enough and they're finally, had enough and just going to say something about it. It's a great thing.
Well, I'm certainly hoping that some sort of a tipping point happens eventually. And I do think that the recession is really helpful because it's getting people to talk about taxing, which makes a lot of sense. You know, as a mother and as a physician, I know that if you can regulate something and take it out, you know, right now it's all underground and black market and drug cartels. That doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, if it's regulated, then people will have more control over it, not less. You know, people are so afraid of the cat being out of the bag and things getting out of control, but it's out of control now because it's all underground. So it really, to me, it's safer. It's certainly in terms of, dealers don't card. And I do sort of have worries and caveats about adolescents and kids being, you know, having more access to cannabis than to other drugs. The brain is still being formed and there's connections still being made and there's the whole issue of pruning in adolescence. And the brain is really very vulnerable in childhood and adolescence. And it's not necessarily the best time to be experimenting in an unsupervised kind of a way. And so if nothing else, when you regulate, it would actually be harder for kids to get cannabis.
Yeah, we see that in survey after survey. I always respond, you know, they say we don't want to make it easier for the kids to get marijuana. And I say the surveys show 85% of them can find it in their high school right now. So,
yeah.
With regard to mental health, I imagine that a lot of people out there that are using the various illicit substances, marijuana included, are doing so as a way of self-medicating for the fact that they don't have the kind of health care coverage that allows for mental health treatment. Do you see legalization of marijuana or regulation of marijuana as a way to start addressing that, maybe turning some of the revenues toward better healthcare treatment, maybe mental health treatment?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends what happens. You know, if it turns out that it's really just medical marijuana as opposed to legalization, then people are going to have to go to a doctor to get, you know, their recommendations. And so then they really can be screened for other psychiatric problems and depression and anxiety and, you know, panic attacks, all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. You know, there aren't a lot of psychiatrists in the middle of the country. We're mostly at the edges. You know,
right.
We're mostly on, you know, like New York and LA and San Francisco. And it's really hard to find a good psychiatrist or a good psychopharmacologist in the middle of the country.
Sure.
So I don't know how that would necessarily change. But I mean, I'm certainly, in general, drugs are a public health issue. They should not be a criminal justice issue. It doesn't make any sense to take something as natural as altering yourself and make it a crime. And I certainly don't understand. You know, addiction is a health issue. It's a disease. It's a syndrome of symptoms that need to be treated by a doctor, a psychiatrist, a therapist. It doesn't make any sense to take somebody who is an addict and make them a criminal. And on the other hand, I really hate the idea of somebody plea bargaining and going into treatment as an addict. To get out of going to jail. That doesn't make any sense either. I mean, I don't really like this idea of coerced treatment. But I do think that drug use and alcohol use is a public health issue.
First and foremost. Yeah, well put, definitely. Before we let you go, Dr. Julie Holland is the author of Weekends at Bellevue. Tell folks how they can get a hold of that book and give us a little preview of your upcoming cannabis book.
Well, Weekends at Bellevue is, you know, available pretty much in any bookstore online. Or you can go to weekendsatbellevue.com, and there's a link there, I think, to Amazon. But it's everywhere. I made it to number 34 on the New York Times bestseller list, which I was very excited about.
That's wonderful.
The book that I'm editing now is tentatively titled The Pot Book, A Comprehensive Look at the Risks and Benefits of Cannabis. And it's sort of a companion piece to the book I did on MDMA, which is called Ecstasy, The Complete Guide, A Comprehensive Look at the Risks and Benefits of MDMA. So it's looking at it as a recreational drug and the issues of drug policy and public health. And it's also looking at it as a medicine. And there's chapters and sections on using medical marijuana. So it's something that I'm editing with multiple other contributors, which is just like the Ecstasy book I did, where I've got sort of experts from around the world weighing in. And then I'm writing intros and a couple of chapters myself. So it's a nonprofit book. All proceeds will go toward funding clinical medical marijuana research, just like the Ecstasy book was a nonprofit book also.
Well, excellent.
But Weekends at Bellevue is a profit book, so feel free to buy it. Mama needs a new pair of shoes.
That's right. So. Oh, well, thank you so much, Dr. Julie Holland. We appreciate you for being here, and we look forward to seeing you on your next television appearances. You're doing a great job. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny how the Today Show really keeps doing these cannabis pieces.
Yeah.
Not sure what's going on with them.
Well, the only sector of business that seems to be having growth right now is the cannabis business, or reporting on it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks for talking.